Today on The Grave Talks, Night Terrors, a conversation with Travis Webb. As a child, Travis Webb experienced night terrors. The night terrors did not just end at his bed, though. The terrors would evolve into scratches, bruises, and unexplained physical evidence of abuse, although no living person ever physically touched Travis. How did he understand and explain this to his friends and family? And did he ever find a way to make this connection to the dark side of the paranormal cease? This is his story today on The Grave Talks.
Honestly, it would have to be, I'm 34 now. It would have been when I was around 8 or 9 years old. My parents had just got a divorce. I started developing night terrors.
Mm-hmm.
They did sleep studies on me. You know, they basically said, yes, you have night terrors. And what ended up happening is between 8 and 9 to about 11 to 12 years old, they would be so severe that not only would I wake up and still think I was in said nightmare, but I would see things. And the doctors would all tell me, you know, oh, it's at your brain, you know, trying to comprehend what you're dreaming, you know, you're not coming. Basically, your subconscious isn't lining up with your consciousness fast enough when you wake up, is mm-hmm. what the doctors would tell me. Well, then it started to get a little further as I became a teenager and started entering, you know, the dating world and seeing different girls and stuff like that, as you do as a teenager. I would be at their house and I would see things at their house that I also saw at my house, but I wasn't asleep. So it turned into this fascination. I dated a girl that was into the goth style of clothing and mentality. You know, as kids, you don't know what you're doing. We would mess with Ouija boards, stuff like that. And things kind of cascaded into when I became old enough, working full time and was able to afford it. I invested in some equipment, and then I've been doing it now almost 14 years. I've been investigating. So that's basically how it started, was just from the night terrors and seeing. I mean, these things were like monsters to me as a kid, obviously. But that's kind of what led me down that path.
So let's go back to that. Let's examine that a little mm-hmm. bit further. Let's talk about the night terrors themselves. And I want to dive into the things you were seeing at other people's houses that they weren't seeing, mm-hmm. but you were seeing at your house. But before we get even to there, tell me about the night terrors. Like, what was a night terror for you? How do you define it? What was going on in your mind? What were you seeing? What were you experiencing?
Okay. What led me going to the hospital and having the sleep study done and all that stuff is these night terrors would get so bad. You know, I like, for instance, I'll give you one. Most of them are very personal for me, and I don't really talk about them, but I'll give you one of them.
Mm-hmm.
This specific monster that I have a name for that I've seen periodically throughout my entire life since then, it had its hands wrapped around my throat and it was strangling me. Well, in real life, I stopped breathing. So they had the study done or whatever, and they found out that the type of night terrors I have, and I don't remember the medical term for it, but basically my body reacts to my nightmares so severely that I can stop breathing, I can wake up with bruises, scratches, and they're not self-inflicted. Mm-hmm. Some people that I grew up with were Catholic, and of course they thought I was possessed, you know, that kind of stuff, which I assure you I wasn't possessed. But they were very severe. They affected real life almost on a daily basis as a kid.
Mm-hmm. So you would have these experiences and you would have these dreams of these things. Mm-hmm. And you're saying you would wake up with literally physical remnants yep. of what happened in the dream?
Yep. Yep. Yes, I have a couple of members of my team, good friends of mine. They've actually witnessed it in person. They've seen it happen. We've had cameras rolling with us sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually have documentation of bruises, scratches, and I never touched myself. I never hit anything. Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen so often now as an adult. It was much, much more often as a kid. But it does high stress, you know, really high stress level things that happen in adult life.
Mm-hmm.
They do tend to spur it on. It seems the more stressed out I am, the more it happens.
So just let me ask you, I mean, how do they medically explain bruises, scratches, and things like that appearing on your body without you, doing it to yourself?
Yep, they didn't. They didn't. They had no medical explanation. The doctor that I had as a kid was used to be a general in the Navy, so he was a very hard-nosed guy. You know, everything was scientific. When they did the first sleep study on me, I got a couple of scratches on my forehead.
Mm-hmm.
And when he came back in the room to wake me up, because for back then, this would have been in the early 90s, mid 90s.
Yeah.
Back then, they only sleep studied you for about an hour to 2 hours. They didn't do an entire night. So when he came in to wake me up, he saw the scratches. And of course, they take pictures of you before and after, all that. And it freaked him out. Like, it genuinely freaked him out. He had no explanation for it. I mean, it's documented that it happened,
yeah,
but there's just no explanation for it.
So, I mean, as you know, I would imagine, you know, you have parents that are bringing you in for the sleep study because,
yep,
they care enough about you to do that. It's not just you,
mm-hmm,
at, you know, eight going, let's go do a sleep study because this would be a good idea. So you have parents who care about you that are taking you in for this. What is their reaction to this, where you have these bruises, these scratches, and the doctor can't explain it?
My dad was a God-fearing man, so he put it on the, you know, it's not real. If we ignore it, it'll go away.
Mm-hmm.
My mother is the opposite. My mother is actually a part of our team. She actually ghost hunts with us. Back then, she was worried, nervous, scared, you know, all the things a normal mother, I guess, in that situation would be.
Sure.
They mainly just kept an eye on me. You know, if I woke up screaming, you know, obviously, you know, kids have nightmares, so parents are used to checking on their kids, especially if they wake up screaming. But mine was, I mean, I think I ran my parents ragged as a kid because it was almost every night.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, they definitely cared and they paid attention and they believed me because they witnessed it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my dad ignored it, but they believed me. And that to me, I think, mattered a lot. That helped me a lot as a kid.
Yeah.
I mean, if your parents don't believe you, then you think you're crazy, you know?
I mean, these things are clearly happening. And I mean, as a parent,
yeah,
myself, you know, you look at your kid and if that thing that's going on night after night, the first thing you want to do is find a way to make it stop.
Yep.
How did, I mean,
oh, yeah,
your mom was assuming.
My dad took me to church.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry. My dad took me to church. You know, it was an apostolic Pentecostal church,
mm-hmm,
just, you know, kind of like a down home Christian church.
Yeah.
You know, I was baptized, all that kind of stuff, you know, in my dad's eyes, that fixed everything. It didn't.
Yeah.
But that's how my dad tried to help. My mom just mainly just was nurturing, understanding. If I had a bad night, you know, she kind of helped me through it, you know, that kind of thing. They did what they could.
Yeah.
You know?
And it just kept happening over. So I mean, has this ever ceased for you?
It has slowed down as an adult.
Okay.
It has slowed down substantially. Like I said, stress is a trigger, and I don't mean stress like work or anything. I mean like stress. You know, you have a death in the family, you know, you can't make your bills. You know, the stress that all of us adults have. The real high stuff, mm-hmm, I'll have one. But it's like one every couple months, maybe. You know, I've had friends, you know, I've had women around, you know, we're sleeping and, you know, they hear me cursing and yelling and flailing around, you know, so I mean, people have witnessed it before,
yeah,
but it's not often.
Do you put that on your match profile? Like, beware, I may get bruises and,
yeah,
scratches at night. three things you don't know about me.
I have thought about it, honestly. I mean, I've never scared anybody away, though. I've been lucky.
Yeah.
You know, none of the people that have been around me have been scared. I mean, they've been freaked out, and they've asked a lot of questions. But I've never had anybody, you know, avoid me because of it.
Sure.
So I've been lucky in that sense.
Well, I mean, it's very fascinating. I mean, just the fact that those sort of things happen. I mean, when let's continue to dive into this area. And there's, like I said, there's many other areas I want to talk about. But the fact that you are so, you know, attuned to this and have such firsthand experience, it's very interesting to dive into this with someone who has those moments. So, I mean, what do you, as you look back on this, let's first take a step back and talk about what did you view it as a child, not what you view it as today or how you attribute mm-hmm. these things, but as a child, when these things were going on, your dad's essentially, for lack of a better term, and I'm not trying to be crude, but, you know, pray it away. And your mom is more, you know, scientific based, you know, nurturing and just trying to be there for you. How are you processing all of that as a child?
Honestly, I can't tell you verbatim how I was feeling, because that was a very long time ago, obviously. But I do remember that the way that it would be explained to me, the way that, you know, like my mom would look at it and stuff, is it was almost like I had an imaginary friend. Mm-hmm. It was kind of that same bracket, because, like I said, I would wake up and I would see certain things that were also in my dream. Mm-hmm. And it... for about anywhere between 20 to 30 minutes after I'd wake up, I would see things, I would hear things, I would feel things. And then fast forward to an adult, you know, within the paranormal field, you know, you meet mediums, you meet people that claim that they can, you know, speak and talk to the dead, you know, stuff like that. And I've been singled out of groups before. Oh, you know, you have psychic abilities and your night terrors, that was just the dead trying to talk to you. You know, I've had so many explanations given to me. The way I look at it is, you know, a lot of people say it's a gift. The way I look at it is it's a gift and a curse. I'm one of those people that have really good intuition. I kind of call it before it happens, and mm-hmm. I tend to be right most of the time.
Yeah.
But it's also a curse because, you know, I think these things and sometimes people don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, the way I looked at it is I had a monster following me around. I mean, that's the best way to explain it as a kid. As an adult, I look at it as just this weird phenomenon that I'm still trying to find answers to. Mm-hmm. But as a kid, it was a monster.
As an adult, I mean, you can't just say, you know, it's a monster following you around. I mean, and you're trying to find answers to it. But, you know, if you were to try and give, I mean, obviously you're still trying to figure this out. So I'm not asking you to tell me, you know, full, you know, here's exactly what your answer is. But where are you on it? Like, where does your mind sit on this when you try and make sense of waking up with scratches and things like that you didn't inflict on yourself?
Part of my family are of German royalty back in the early 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly, just based on research, I have some team members that they teach paranormal in college, you know, like classes about it and studies and how to study and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Everybody that I've talked to and worked with, what we have found is, and what we believe, and I don't have proof yet.
Sure.
But what we believe is at some point in my family tree, somebody or some people decided to do some things that they didn't quite understand.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems to be linked to the males in my family. Because as I want to say about 3 to 4 years ago, I had just turned 30 and I had rekindled with my dad's side of the family, because my dad passed away when I was 21.
Mm-hmm.
I had rekindled with my dad's family and I had found out that some of my cousins had the exact same problem I did.
Really?
Yep. Exact. Almost verbatim. Seeing the same things, feeling the same things, everything. And this was without prompt and without telling them what I had had. And, you know, their parents didn't know what I had had, because luckily my parents kept it very quiet.
Yeah.
Not many people knew.
So, I mean,
that's very interesting.
Tell me how that conversation went. I mean, tell me what was that like? Walk me through the literal experience of connecting with your cousins and how this conversation goes and you guys kind of having this realization together.
Well, basically they had found, you know, through Facebook and Instagram, you know, social media, they had found out that I was doing this stuff, you know, the ghost hunting and the paranormal investigating and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the conversation started there. And then they're like, yeah, we've always wanted to do that. You know, when we were kids, you know, it's not so bad now, but when we were kids, we used to have these nightmares And we'd wake up with bruises or scratches, and we would see things throughout the day that we had witnessed in our dream the night before. And I kind of stopped him. I'm like, hold on a second. And then I told him what happened to me. So that's kind of how we kind of linked it all together.
Mm-hmm.
But there's about 20 of us in the family that have the same experiences.
So you all kind of had these, what was it like for everybody to kind of have that cathartic moment? Had the others already kind of made this connection before you had made that with them through them finding you?
No, none of them. None of the ones that I personally had spoken to,
mm-hmm.
Which I had only spoken to, say, 13 or 14 of us.
Yeah.
Like I said, there's around, I think there's 21 of us exactly. I think I make 21. I had only spoken to like 13 or 14 of them, and they hadn't connected any of the dots. They didn't know that anybody else in our group that was talking, they didn't know any of the cousins were experiencing the same thing. You know, they thought they were crazy just like I did when I was younger. So it was one of those, it was, I like to call it a come to Jesus moment. It was one of those moments where everybody's kind of like, whoa, wait a second.
Sure.
You're not crazy. This is kind of weird. This is too coincidental to just be random.
Yeah.
So that's what sparked the looking into family history and that kind of stuff.
Tell me about that. Tell me, as you looked into the family history and you said you go back into mm-hmm. to German ancestry and heritage and
yep.
and some people messing with things that they didn't quite understand. Tell me how you came yep. to that conclusion.
There was a report that we had found. I want to call it a newspaper, but in Germany, it's kind of more like a public journal.
Mm-hmm.
It's not written the same way like newspapers are, but basically, a journalist had found, his name was John Webb. My last name is Webb. And when we were in Germany, it was spelled with one B and now we're at two Bs.
Mm-hmm.
It was written in the journal that he was found murdered, of course. But the way he was murdered, I guess, caused the equivalent that we had in the United States. It caused what they call a satanic panic,
mm-hmm.
where basically they found proof and evidence that it was a ritualistic murder. The way he was murdered and the way things were done was very ritualistic in nature. And of course, the further you go into that, the less you can find because it's so far back. You know, the records aren't the same.
Yeah.
But that's the main thing that we found, that he was, you know, John specifically was part of a ritualistic murder. Then I have pictures of some family members that were part of the family by marriage that were part of, I'm not an expert on this stuff, but supposedly they were part of a coven, you know, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So when you just kind of put two and two together, it seems to line up pretty well. But once again, I don't have proof, at least physical proof yet, on what's going on with everything.
But it's a far more than most have. I mean, you have a bit more depth to it than I think most would have on something like that.
Well, I've been very lucky. Like I said, a couple of team members that I have, they're very, very, very gifted when it comes to research. They're very meticulous. So I've been lucky. I mean, if I was doing the research by myself, I don't think I would even know half the stuff that I know now. So I've been very lucky in that sense. These people definitely know what they're doing that are on my team.
Yeah. So I mean, take me to this, the situations when you're younger and you feel that you are seeing things, not just in dreams, not just in these night terrors, but you're seeing things at your house and you're realizing when you're at a girl's house, wait a second, yep. like this isn't normal.
yep.
Hey, let's go watch TGIF. But what the fuck is that over yeah. there in the corner? You know, tell me about that.
At first I treated it just like I did at home. You know, it's me. Nobody else is saying anything. I'm the only one seeing it. I don't want these girls and their families thinking I'm crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I grew up in a very small farm town, so word travels.
Sure.
So, you know, I stayed quiet. It wasn't until I think I was 14 or 15, somewhere in that range, no older than that. I was dating a girl whose parents were, they were pagan. Like, that was their religion. You know, they practiced all that stuff. They randomly one night, we were sitting around watching a movie, and I mean, it wasn't even a scary movie. I think it was some family movie. I think it was Toy Story or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
And they paused the movie and all of a sudden said, did anybody else hear that? And of course we had all heard it. You know, it sounded like somebody was running up the stairs.
Yeah.
So myself, her dad and her brother, you know, the guys, we got up to go check. And when we rounded the corner, all three of us saw what I see in my night terrors. We saw this we'll call it a creature. That's the only way I can describe it. Mm-hmm. We saw this thing standing in my girlfriend's bedroom's doorway. It wasn't until that the two of them saw the same thing that I saw that I was kind of like, wait a second, maybe there's more to this. Mm-hmm. And that's what kind of led down the rabbit hole of investigating this stuff, you know, using equipment, logging things, backtracking things, you know, that kind of thing.
Sure. I mean, when you saw that, I mean, outside of a night terror, was that like the first time you had an experience outside of the night terror where it was like, wait a second, this is in broad daylight?
With other people, that was the first time.
Okay.
By myself, no. It would happen by myself all the time. And like I said, I would just ignore it. That's just kind of how mm-hmm. I was kind of like my dad. Just ignore it. It'll go away.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until that specific day. That's why I remember it like it was yesterday. It wasn't until that incident where I had multiple other people who did not know me personally seeing the exact same thing I was seeing. It wasn't until that moment that I was like, okay, wait a second, there's more to this.
What were you thinking about yourself? I mean, prior to others kind of confirming that, you know, they saw it as well. Were you doubting yourself?
I mean,
yeah, just tell me, like, yeah. How did you feel?
I was doubting myself. I thought I was crazy. I thought I had something wrong with me, which, yeah. I mean, the jury's still out on that. But, you know, I thought something was wrong with me. You know, maybe I had a psychological problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the older I got and the more terms I learned and what things meant, you know, I thought maybe I had a personality disorder.
Yeah.
I mean, I went through the rabbit hole of everything. I mean, I was even tested for, you know, bipolar, schizophrenia. I was tested for all of this.
Sure. Stuff. And one would want to be too. One would want to try to understand and narrow those things down. That's the right route to take.
Yes.
But once you kind of went through those things, and I'm assuming the results were like, no, you don't have any of those things.
Yep.
You're sitting there.
Never came back positive.
You're still sitting there having these experiences, and what are you feeling?
Mm-hmm. Once again, now that I've been doing this so long, now I understand it as just a part of what I do, I guess. You know, each of us have what I like to call, I refer to it as what I call a stain, but basically you, as like you referred to in the beginning of our conversation, you know, most people that are in this field have something that happened to them when they're younger, usually,
mm-hmm.
and then it just kind of snowballs into a fascination as they become older. I call that a stain. You have something that happens when you're younger and it never leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just kind of how I look at it nowadays. You know, it doesn't freak me out anymore. I don't really, I mean, once again, the jury's still out. I might be crazy, but I don't really look at myself like I'm crazy. I just kind of use it and go with the flow. You know, we've had investigations, you know, especially big investigations where there's a lot of us and we're in a place that is like, it's notorious, you know, it has some crazy things in it. When I see these things or experience these things or get these same feelings, it's almost like a little radar that I have, and it leads us to evidence, and it seems to work 99.9% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's weird. Like I said, I've had very, very renowned psychics. You know, I don't know if you ever heard of Michelle Bollinger.
I have not personally.
I've had her. Yes. I've had her tell me I'm gifted. You know, I've had Chip Coffee tell me I'm gifted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had quite a few very famous, known, you know, psychics, mediums
mm-hmm.
tell me things. I mean, granted, I had no time for them to give me an explanation, of course, but I've had them tell me things that just kind of, I just go with the flow with it, you know? I don't know if that makes sense or not, but it's just a part of me.
Yeah. I mean, let me ask you this. I mean, when you have some of these experiences, for example, you know, you see something physically out there in the ether that's
yeah.
around you. Obviously you were saying earlier when you were at your girlfriend's house as a teenager, you know, others saw it as well, but uh-huh. is that always the case? Are there many times where it's just yeah. you that has the experience and sees it and nobody else has any clue what's going on around them?
Yes, perfectly. I would say 90%. I'm a percent person. I'm sorry.
Sure.
I would say 90% of the time. It's just me. Now, we had an event. I don't know if you've ever heard of the place called Madison Seminary.
I have not.
Okay, it's up here in Ohio. It's just east of Cleveland. It's up on the lake, you know, Erie.
Mm-hmm.
It's considered the most haunted place in Ohio. It's world famous for it. I mean, people from all over the world come to visit this place.
Mm-hmm.
We used to work side by side with the owner. And we used to run their ghost hunts, and we would, you know, people would come and we would teach them how to ghost hunt. We would show them things and let them investigate the building, you know, the typical stuff.
Sure.
Well, one night was kind of rough. There was a major thunderstorm. We had a tornado warning coming through. We had to cut the night short. You know, all the guests left. And myself and my best friend, who's also my partner in this ghost hunting, his name's Eric. It was just him and I, and we were locking up the building, you know, making sure there's no stragglers, you know, that kind of thing that you do when you're closing up for the night. And he just so happened to had seen what my girlfriend back then had seen and what I always see. This, once again, we'll refer to it as a creature. He had seen it. And I had told him about it before. So, you know, we can say that it was in his mental maybe, but we hadn't talked about it in months, you know, prior to that. He described this thing perfectly to me. I looked where he was looking and didn't see it, but he saw it. And I thought that was very weird. Well, we hurried up, locked the building and everything. We went outside and we were talking. And this is like 3 a.m. This is like December, January. So up here in Ohio, it's very, very cold, very, very snowy, that kind of thing. We had a group of crows all of a sudden just leave a tree, like fly out of a tree, which scared the crap out of us, if I'm honest.
Sure.
Well, when that happened, we looked up at the building, and when you have a public building like that, that's, you know, you allow the public to investigate, Ohio state law, you have to have exit signs for all the exits. Well, when those exit signs are on and they're the only things on, you get this red hue down all the hallways and by all the windows, so you can kind of see in the building.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then him and I both saw this thing standing in the window. And that's one of the first major times as an adult that I've had anybody see it and experience it along with me. So that was a very amazing, you know, I mean, not amazing, it was scary, but it was amazing to me. It was kind of an amazing revelation of, okay, there is more to this. Let's keep going.
Do you feel like the thing that you're experiencing there, like you experienced there in the seminary, and what you experienced as a teenager at your girlfriend's house and other times as well individually, is it the same thing?
I believe so.
What do you think?
I definitely believe so.
What do you think it is that is following you? This entity, this creature, this monster?
I think it's something tied to my family.
Okay.
I'm a betting man. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I'm probably wrong. I'm not an expert, but this is what I believe. This is what I feel.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that at some point in my family history, somebody made a deal to get rich, or, you know, you hear the stories about that kind of stuff, especially back in the older days. And I think that because I am the only son of my father, that's why it's attached to me. That's what I think. And I also think that's why my dad ignored it, because I think he experienced it as a kid. But back in his day, you would be considered even crazier. So that's my belief. Now, he's not around, obviously, for me to ask, but that's just, it's the feeling I get. I'm probably wrong, but that's just the feeling that I get.
Do you have any other siblings or anybody else in your lineage that you can ask any of those questions to? Do you suspect, you know, grandpa or great-great-grandpa or anything like that?
Yeah. The only thing I know for sure is, like I said, some of my cousins, you know, their mothers and fathers, or our grandparents, that kind of thing. All of us have heard things, but we don't know. You know, we don't have physical proof.
So with the fact that this thing seems to be following you, it seems to be also following your cousins and such. Has anyone ever brought up just the concept or the idea of, how do we make this shit stop? How do we rid ourselves of this?
Oh yes, I've tried the Reiki stuff. You know, I've had a Catholic priest, you know, do the, not an exorcism, but I guess they call it a cleansing. I'm sorry, I'm not Catholic. I don't want to butcher that. But the basically before the exorcism, the cleansing, the blessing, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been asked to carry like the Saint Benedict's medal. You know, I've had the religious side of, it's a demon, do this to keep it away from you.
Mm-hmm.
Then I've had the Reiki side of, oh, it's a part of your paranormal psyche. I can't remember the verbiage for that. But basically, I've tried things to get rid of it, especially when I was much younger, you know, in my early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
I'm divorced now, but I was married. I got married very young. I was 21 when I got married. And I wanted it gone because, you know, we were originally planning on having kids. I didn't want my kids to experience it, you know, that kind of stuff.
Sure.
So yes, did try to get rid of it, but it's still around. Like I said, not near as often as it used to be, but it's definitely around for sure.
What, I mean, this is something that obviously has been with you for such a long time. Ideally, I mean, just if you were just to speak your own opinion on this, mm-hmm. what do you want to have happen with it? I mean, do you want to rid yourself of it? Do you want it to go away? But what would be the perfect scenario here for you with this thing that's kind of plagued you throughout your life?
As long as it leaves other people alone in my life, you know, loved ones, friends, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a part of me, and I just, at this point, it's been around so long, it's just kind of a part of life, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
If there was a way to get rid of it but not damage anything that I have, you know, quote-unquote gifts, passions, you know, basically change me, if there was guarantees for that, then yeah, I would love to get rid of it. But at this point, I just, you know, it kind of is what it is. I mean, that's the only way I can describe it.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with Travis Webb. In part two, what is the story and history of the haunted Madison Seminary? Is there a risk to having a dark entity following Travis around with his future relationships? How often do the paranormal investigators come up against demons versus disturbed people or souls within the circle of Travis? And what kind of entities haunt the old Madison Seminary? Until next time, for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening. Thank you.